Hello.
Hello and welcome.
I got to the hello before you because you didn't know when I was going to start recording.
This is true.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well.
Well, what's up, man? What's up, dude?
Oh, not much. Just, this is the thing about these intros now that are harder is because generally
nothing's
there'd be
changed.
Things that would be happening in my life that I could report on. Nothing's changing right now.
Yeah.
Everything's the same.
Yep. I agree with that. I mean, all I can say is, I've been like hanging in the shed still. I don't know. It's like hot now.
Which is true. It is hot. Oh, my dog got worms.
Yeah, that you told me about. That sucks and gross.
Yeah. So that's gross and sucks. So I've been kind of taking care of her a bit.
Is she doing better?
She's doing better for
good.
Sure. And she's happy and yeah. So.
Oh, what a weird thing
we
have.
Taken care of. Yeah.
Makes me feel strange.
Very, very, very weird.
Makes me feel like I have worms in me.
What is, you know, now that you guys are grossed out, our guest. Today we're talking about food.
Yes.
So our good friend Marissa runs a Instagram account called That Cheese Plate or Cheese by Numbers, and she just put out a book today called That Cheese Plate Will Change Your Life, and it's available everywhere. And it is awesome. Her cheese plates are incredible.
Yeah.
And this will teach you how to impress your friends before the next 8123 fest. When you have 15 people staying in your apartment, you can make a cheese plate from this book and impress them. So,
yep. Yeah, we've been friends with Marissa since our first tour. So, you know, and she has such an awesome story of just her career, and you know, she worked at late night shows for a while and then transitioned into making a book about cheese plate, and we get into all that, and I think it's really inspiring.
Awesome chat. And for anyone trying to get into the music industry or just carve your own path for what you want to do with your life, pay attention to what she has to say, because it's inspiring. So
definitely.
Sweet. Well, we will get into the chat because it's kind of a long one, but it's great. First, here is a message from a sponsor. Doing good. Doing the same thing as everybody else in the world.
Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you very much. Mother's Day as a family, not you being a mom, but that's so exciting. I know. Yeah, it was awesome. I mean,
how is the baby?
She's good. She's just, it's just weird that nobody has seen her yet in person.
Yeah, that's so true.
Literally, she was born a week before all of this happened. And then,
oh gosh,
she's just a different baby, like every day, you know. So
yeah.
I just feel very weird that people didn't like get to see her when she was like a tiny, tiny baby, because she's just grown so much, and she's like figuring out how to laugh right now. And
oh
so,
my gosh!
Yeah,
that is so crazy. Because yeah, she's like 3 months old now, right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, so cute.
Yeah,
she's already talking, right?
She's just a world's best baby.
The best.
how's things going with you? Having a hectic week with the book about to come out.
Yeah, it comes out tomorrow, which is crazy. I feel like I've been counting down to this for a very long time. I actually like put the pre-order up in December, which was pretty early for a book to be on pre-order. But we were like, oh, people want to order it for Christmas. And then people ordered it and they're like, wait, it doesn't come out till May. Yeah. So I'm happy that May 12th is tomorrow, but yeah, it's been interesting. I mean, I saw you guys right before this quarantine happened, and I flew back to my parents' house just because I wanted to avoid New York at all costs. And it's been trying to like revamp my business working out of their house has been interesting, but it's been fun for the most part.
I mean, I can only imagine, like, I mean, going back home, but you're also starting a whole new chapter of your life. It's probably pretty weird.
Yeah. It's really confusing for my brain because I'm sitting in my childhood bedroom right now at the desk that I used to sit at when I literally like ran a street team for the Morning Light, the Fearless Records, and I was 14, you know, and like now fast forward to today, I'm like sitting here with a book that I wrote and I'm like, what is this? This is like a really crazy full circle experience. And I don't know, it's very trippy.
Yeah. We were thinking about like when we met for the first time, which would have been 2007, right?
Yeah, 2007. I think it was July. It was that summer because you guys played at Trackside, right?
On our first tour.
Yeah, and I just turned 15. So, yeah, babies. Crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll remember that show because it seemed like, I mean, I don't know if you were fans of ours, but I remember you guys being, and it was like one of the first times people showed up early to one of the shows on that tour. So it was like, I remember we get out and like loaded the gear and then you guys were like hanging out near a tree and it was like, oh, there's people already here.
It was like, well, it's funny because all of those shows at Trackside, like we had nothing to do. Like I grew up in the suburbs of Connecticut and as a 15-year-old who like didn't really like to party and was just like an emo kid, those shows at Trackside were like our thing to do. So we would just like hang out and just like be around. I don't know. It was like such a fun thing to have, especially in a boring place like Connecticut. Like Britton Billick, mutual friend of all of ours, he really transformed that place and made it into an awesome music venue that was like a stop for many bands on tour. So it was a really cool place to have like at the age of 15.
Yeah. I'm sure. And you know, like you guys were getting bands to come through there that wouldn't have come to Connecticut if it wasn't for that venue.
Oh yeah, absolutely not. Like, and this venue too, like you guys know, it's literally in the middle of the woods next to a train station and it's a teen center. So like, I mean, back in the day, like that's kind of the music scene that we all kind of grew up in. There were a lot of teen centers on the tour. Like it was a big stop to go to a teen center, you know? But teen centers have these like random dances. I don't even know if they do at teen centers anymore, but definitely not music as much as it was back in the day.
Yeah. So, I mean, what like caused you, obviously like having some type of a business sense or something like early on to like want to be like working for the Morning Light on their on their street team when you're 15 and doing all the interviews you were doing, everything, like what caused you to even have the thought to do that? Because, you know, I think the average 15-year-old girl that's going to those shows is just, you know, excited to try to take a picture with one of the guys in the band or something.
Yeah, I've always been very work focused. And when I was 13, I got introduced to the band Something Corporate and Jack's Mannequin. And that was kind of the first band that really made me feel something when I listened to the music. You know, it's like before that, I liked music, but it was always kind of like when I was really young, it was like either top 40 or like 90s bands that my parents would play. And I feel like Something Corporate was the first band that I was like, oh, I feel like this music feels my teenage angst and there's something like deeper behind this, you know? And this was in 2005. So the internet, you know, was there. It was MySpace days, and forums/street teams were a big thing. So I looked up Jack's Mannequin street team and I like joined their street team called the Messengers. And what they would do is they would send you these like postcards to like post around town to Borders or to like to the bookstore, to like wherever you want to put them, hang them up, take a picture, post it, and you can get points to win like a t-shirt or something. And as a 13-year-old, I was like, this is so much fun. Wow, I feel like I'm actually like involved with this band that I really like, and I'm working to help promote them. And I feel like I'm doing something that, I don't know, it's just like at such a young age, I don't know if I could even process what it was at the point, but I felt
a part
of awesome to be able to be part of the community. Yeah. And so from then on, like I won tickets. My very first concert, like besides NSYNC, Aaron Carter, very first concert was going to see Andrew McMahon perform. So he got diagnosed with leukemia in the summer of 2005, and he had a kind of comeback show. So 100 days after his stem cell transplant, it's like you're considered your like first birthday. So you can, from that point on, you're in remission. And he had this comeback show in LA for family and friends, and 50 fans got to go. And on the street scene, they were like, write in why you deserve tickets. And I remember sitting in the living room and being like, Mom, I'm entering this contest. If I win, I can go to a show in California. And she's like, okay, cool. Like, you're not going to win. And I end up writing this whole thing about, like my grandparents who passed away from cancer when I was young. And like, I don't even know, like volunteering at the food bank. I don't even know what I wrote. I would love to find that 13-year-old essay. but I ended up winning tickets to go to the show. So I called my mom, and she was like, oh crap. Okay, well, let's figure this out. And me and my best friend and my mom went to LA, and that was my first concert. And it was insane because there were about 150 people there. Andrew was still no hair, very frail. It was his first show back. And that just like hit this like nerve in me where I'm like, wow, this band definitely means something, and music definitely means something, and I need to like keep going with this. And I met friends at that show who later on, a few years later, we kept in touch, and they started an organization called 1111 AM, which is a nonprofit that raised awareness for young adult cancer research. And when I was 16, they asked if I wanted to be the social networking director. So like basically run all the social media sites.
Oh shit.
So I did that when I was 16, but the year before when I met you guys, it was kind of this blossoming of my love for music, my love for going to shows, my love for like photographing and just being part of the community in a sense. And I remember meeting Nano, who you guys know. He was managing All Time Low at the time. And I think it was probably in 2007 I met him. I don't know how I met him, but probably at Trackside or something. And he was like, oh, I feel like you're really like a hard worker. Do you want to run the street team for the Morning Light? And I was like, yeah, sure. Why not? That sounds fun. So I didn't really realize what this entailed, running a street team. And I like knew what it was like to be on a street team, but to run it was very different. And I remember having conference calls with Fearless Records, like pretending that I was 18, but I was actually like probably just turned 16, maybe still 15. Them being like, all right, Marissa, like tell us about your project. Like, how's your band doing? They had a street team leader for like each band. And yeah. I was like, yeah, it's going well. Like we have some fun challenges up, like this and that. And just like thinking that was the coolest thing ever that I'm on this conference call with Fearless Records. And then B, like also not really knowing what I was doing, but like figuring it out along the way. But it was really fun because I got to like create all these like projects and challenges. And like I remember one that was like create a banner. Remember on MySpace you had those banners that like promoted albums. It's like create a custom banner and like the winner will get 100 points. And because I was on Jack's Mannequin Street Team, I kind of knew how to create these different challenges and whatnot. And it was super fun to be able to be in that position. And then the Morning Light ended up breaking up, and that's when I kind of went into working for 1111, where I ran their Tumblr page, their MySpace, Facebook, Twitter, I think Twitter in like 2008 started. And again, it was kind of in a situation where I'm like, okay, what are some fun like challenges I can think of? And so I was really into photography. So I did a photo competition where it was like, take a picture of something that makes your life beautiful and we'll, you know, post them all in our MySpace and pick a winner. And from there, we ended up 1111 teamed up with Dear Jack Foundation, which was Andrew McMahon's organization, and ended up going on Warped Tour for like 5 summers in a row. So then that kind of launched me into the Warped Tour space of like actually working in music production and like live music. And that really was like, okay, this is what I want to do. So I ended up doing Warped Tour with them for in New England, in the Northeast, you can go to like 7 Warped Tour dates in the span of like driving across Arizona. So I'd hit up all the dates like in my mom's car, just like, you know, drive through. And I thought it was so cool to be like, yeah, I'm a vendor, you know, walk in, sit at the merch table, sell these orange bracelets. And it was the best. I had so much fun. And then after that, like, this was all while I was in high school. College approached, and it was like, okay, well, what do you want to study? And I'm like, well, music business, right? Because like, that's what I've been doing, and that's what I want to do. And this is the only thing that makes me excited. But not many schools like had this as an option back in the day. And also, I was hit with a lot of not criticism, but people being like, oh, you can't study music business. Like, really? Like, you have to be in the music business. Like, no one's going to teach you anything at school, that like, yada yada. So that was like a little discouraging.
Did that end up being true?
Because yes and no. So I feel like I learned, so it depends on like where you go and how you make that experience worth it, because I really wanted to go to NYU. That was my first choice. I applied early decision. I had to do like a video, like audition tape, because like part of it was music theory, and like it was just a crazy application. Straight up rejected, was like devastated. I thought that was like my only choice. My second choice was Northeastern in Boston, and I got in January admission. So basically they're like, you can come here, but not till January, because, you know, I don't know why. Probably because like they ran out of housing or something. But with Northeastern, it was great because they have this internship program called the Co-op. And so you do 2 6-month internships over your time there. And they give you so many resources for interviewing, for resume building. There's a whole database for internships that they have. And they had a really strong music business program that not many other schools had. So I feel like it definitely was beneficial for me, but it really depends on like how you make that experience worth it.
Totally. And you were already doing things like since you were 15 that you probably had an upper hand on a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. I remember when I got deferred from Northeastern originally, I sent them this like whole packet of like photos I took at shows, and like, I don't even know. Like, I stacked my resume with like all this information on it, and they're probably just like, what? Okay. Simple taker. A funny thing that I used to do in high school was, since I was working for the Morning Light, I got to get on the guest list for every Fearless band show. That's probably why I saw you guys so much, because I was just always getting put on the guest list for these shows, because I was like a Fearless employee, and I'd get a photo pass for every show. And so I got my first camera when I was 16. It was a Canon SLR, and I would take all of these like awesome photos in front of the barricade, but then like use them in art class, you know, because I'm like, I'm not working for a publication or anything. So that was a fun little life hack back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many people that want to get into the music business somehow and just don't know what to do. They don't know if they should go to school for it or just start doing it. And I mean, it kind of seems like you just kind of took the approach like a bunch of, you know, I guess yours is more of like a hybrid of the two, but you just like started doing whatever you could, even though you weren't getting paid. You just like wanted to be involved, I guess. Is there any advice that you would have for someone that wants to do something like what you did in the industry?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because a lot of it is unpaid. I didn't get paid to intern or to do anything until probably my like last internship in college, because I think now companies are a little bit better about paying their employees, but back in like the 2011, 2012, it's just like, it was normal in the entertainment industry to not make money and to not pay interns. I feel like it's hard because it is one of those businesses where it's like, you either have to know someone, you have to have impeccable timing, and like that just needs to work out, or you need to have like a stacked resume and like really impress someone. But it's like, okay, how do you get a stacked resume? And that's just literally hustling. Like, be on street teams, do everything that you can to get involved and like try to learn as much as you can as you go. A big thing is like, you need to be professional. Like if you are working for a band that you really enjoy, you can't be like in an unprofessional setting. You know, you can't ask them for a photo. Don't like be in the fan world. You have to be like in the professional working mindset, which I think is a lot of people enter the music industry thinking that they'd be able to like hang out with their favorite bands all the time. But it's like, no, it's not like that. Like it will eventually be cool, but you really need to take it seriously because it is a job at the end of the day. And the music industry is a tough place to work. I love it. I still love it. I'm not in it at the moment, but I'm going to jump back in soon, I'm sure. but yeah, I think it's like, definitely if you have the opportunity to go to a university where they have a music business degree, it is helpful, again, because of the internships that are happening around. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's like, you have to be able to just try to find your first footing in and then grow from there, you know?
Yeah. So what was your first paid thing in the music industry once you got done with school?
So my first paid job, well, it's a little bit confusing. I'll just start from college because there's a lot of different things that led up to this. When I went to Northeastern, again, I got in JanStart. So September through December of the first semester of my freshman year, they basically were like, oh, you can go to community college and then come here when, you know, January rolls around. And I didn't want to do that because I'm like, I want to work. I want to do something. Like, I need to be doing music, whatever. So a friend of my mom's actually works for a production company for films. And they said, oh, if Marissa wants to interview to be an intern for like our production company, feel free. So I went to the city, I put on like a suit and like went into this interview when I was 18 and was like, hey, like, I really want to work on this film set. And they're like, cool, like what department do you want to specialize in? And this is like TV film, which is way different than the music industry. And I knew nothing about it, but I knew that I wanted to do like entertainment. And this is the opportunity that popped up. So I was like, oh, you know, just like a PA, I guess. And they're like, okay, great. So I interviewed. They were like, we're either going to place you on a film set in Dallas, Texas, or Dublin, Ireland. I was like, all right, cool. Like, hope for the best. And I got word that I'll be placed on the film in Dublin. So I moved to Dublin and lived there for 4 months, my freshman year of college, and worked on a film set, which was like the craziest experience of my life because the hours are insane. Like you wake up you're on set at 7 a.m. You're working till 7 p.m. Sometimes you're doing overnight shoots. Like it's your life. It becomes your life. And it was a 11-week shoot in and around Dublin. But that crew became like my family. And that was like kind of the first experience I had. It's like, it was almost like being on tour where it's like, you're with these people all the time. And then you're like, wow, this is like something that we built together. And this is really cool. Mm-hmm. So that experience really opened my eyes to TV and film, which like I didn't really know I could like, but later on it made sense how it came back around. So then I went to Northeastern. My first internship was at Network Music Group, which is a management company in Boston. So they manage the bands Fun, Guster, Dispatch, State Radio, Alexi Murdoch, kind of like those jammy bands. And with Fun, it was actually the year that they won their Grammy, 2012. So it was a really exciting year to be at Network. They just launched Boston Calling. Yeah, Boston Calling Music Festival. So I got to experience Boston Calling working for Fun, which was like an amazing experience and opened my eyes to like festival production. And I really enjoyed that. And that was an unpaid internship, but I feel like from just the experience I got and everything that I was able to do and see, it was definitely worth it. But I did realize in that internship that I didn't really want to work in management because it was just a little too slow for my liking. Like I liked being in the live music setting. I liked running around and kind of like using my hands. And with management, you don't really get that too much. So my next internship, I applied to work at the Tonight Show, or at the time it was Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. And this was an internship that I got connected through a friend of a friend's cousin who like gave me the internship coordinator's email, and I like cold emailed them and was like, hi, I really want to work here. Here's my resume. And like, I don't even know what I said. And I ended up getting a response, and they're like, hey, yeah, we're like opening our internship, interviews in like 3 weeks. If you're able to interview, sure. You know, why not? And, I interviewed for that, ended up getting the job working in the music department. So working for the Roots, and then working for the feature music artist on the show. So every day was completely different, which was amazing because you go in and you just like don't even know what's going to happen that day. But then it's like so much action and the day goes by so quick and you're running around. It's like exactly the pace that I like.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to work the last 2 months of late night transitioning into the Tonight Show. So I worked at the premiere of the Tonight Show, which was like the craziest experience of my life. I was like on the roof of 30 Rock watching YouTube play like with a sunset. It was just like, that's it was so the most cool. Bizarre internship I've ever had. And with that, like it was a part-time internship. So I was on 3 days a week and then a girl from NYU was on 2 days a week. And with NYU, they make you, or they encourage you to do like 5 internships at one time, whereas Northeastern has this co-op program. So you literally just move to New York City and that's your life for 6 months. You don't have to do school or anything. Crazy. And so I had this advantage because I had so much free time, and this NYU girl was like super overwhelmed. So I ended up taking like all of her shifts and ended up working like full time at Fallon.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I was there like 5 days a week commuting from Connecticut where my parents lived. And then ended up moving to Brooklyn for a little bit while I did that. And it was awesome because I took this internship so seriously and was like, okay, I'm going to work every day. I'm going to make a new intern manual for all these new interns coming in because like we just revamped the Tonight Show. It's different than late nights. Like there's all these new things happening. And I just was like, again, tapping into my like workaholic, like German state being like, all right, I'm going to make this the best I can be. And not screwing around and not getting, you know, fazed by Zac Efron walking down the hallway or like not making any sort of reaction to any celebrity in the place, which is like, they teach you there, like you need to be a wallflower. Yeah. And like, that's how you exist. So then I finished that internship and I was like, wow, well, I figured out what I want to do. I want to work, for a late night TV show in the music department. And my mom was like, you know, there's like 3 of those that exist. I'm like, yeah, but like, you know, it could happen. Like, why not? And at the time, again, going back to like timing is everything. Stephen Colbert announced that he was taking over for David Letterman. And I knew from the Colbert Report that they did not have a music department. So I was like, okay, here's an opportunity. There is a music department that is going to be built from the ground up. How do I get in there? And, a friend of my brother's actually was a PA on the Colbert Report. And so I hit him up and I was like, John, how do I do this? Like, how do I get in? He's like, I don't even know if I'm getting hired on that show. Like, we have no idea what's happening. And I'm like, okay, well, here's my resume just in case. And then this was January of 2015. Yeah, I graduated in May of 2015. So this was January. And in April or... Sorry, May of 2015, I got an email from this guy, Keith, who is the Roots production manager on Fallon. And he was like, hey, Marissa, I just want to know like what your schedule is like. Colbert is looking for an assistant in the music department. And I was like, wait, what? Like, did you really just email me this? Like, this is crazy. What? And he's like, yeah, like I thought of you because you were such a great intern. And I was like, this is so trippy. And basically, like what I later found out what happened is that Keith's wife works at Seth Meyers, her friend works at the Colbert Report, who's friends with the production manager, who was like, oh, John Batiste needs an assistant. And then that got back to Keith and then he thought of me. So it's like just word of mouth, you know?
That's so crazy.
But it was crazy with the timing of it because I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, like I'm graduating college and this is where I want to work. So cool, let's do it. So I ended up interviewing like 3 times for it to be the assistant to John Batiste, who's an amazing jazz musician, brilliant guy. But it was a crazy job because this was a brand new late night show that didn't even exist yet. So with Fallon, at least they had late night transitioning to the Tonight Show, and they use the same exact office, the same exact theater. Like, nothing mm-hmm. really changed too intensely. But with this, the Colbert Report moved from across town, moved into the Letterman's old theater, had to redo everything. And then Colbert wasn't even playing a character anymore. He was playing himself, which yeah. like was a whole different thing. And then the house band who I was working for, they were a band of Juilliard trained musicians. They never played on TV before. They like, it was a mess the first like a year. But then we ended up getting into a groove and yeah, it was amazing. That was my first job outside of college. That was a really long-winded answer.
No, that's incredible. And I mean, it really goes to show that when you do get opportunities, you took complete advantage of them, you know, and that's how you got the next opportunity. And you worked how many of those, you know, internships were unpaid, where
so many,
people
yeah.
at a certain point feel like I deserve something, or you know, how long can I go without getting paid. But if you continue to push through and do good work, that's how it can happen.
Well, also yeah. doing
and like
going above
said,
and beyond, like
oh yeah, go ahead.
Going and
yeah.
doing that extra step, and that extra step, it showed, and people thought of you when things were changing and there was a job opportunity. Like, you not doing that, maybe, like, you know, the person that you were splitting the time with that you ended up taking over, I mean, clearly she wasn't, I mean, maybe doing a bunch, but you were putting in a lot of time in a specific thing that made you stand out, like, a lot.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I didn't have to make that intern manual or, you know, take on all those hours, but I've just always been that kind of worker. And I feel like in my past, like leading up to that point, it always was something that paid off. And like, I knew that like any energy I put in will be worth it.
Totally.
But that being said too, like it is not an easy world out there. And it's really, really tough for these internships not to be paid, because there's people who are not in the position where they can even support themselves working an unpaid job.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it unlocks like another level of the music industry in general, which just talks about the unfairness in pay. And I experienced this at the Late Show, especially because I ended up getting paid a very, very, very low salary starting out. Didn't even really make much when I left. And I was like living in Bushwick with like four roommates, you know, still having to pay like $900 a month, which for New York is cheap, but that was like a week and a half, or a week of my paycheck plus a little bit, you know? Meanwhile, working alongside people who lived in the West Village who had these penthouses because their parents helped them with rent, you know? And it just like really shined a light on this inequality of wealth in the music industry, where a lot of these companies kind of go after the like, oh, it's a sexy job title, you should be lucky to work here. The amount of times I've gotten told that when I've asked for a raise, like, oh, you should be lucky to work here. It's like, no, you should be lucky to have me and my talent, like pay me for what I deserve.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So let's hope this doesn't get leaked to Colbert. And they're gonna be like, Marissa, don't talk shit. No, but that being said, like I was very outspoken, which they know, like, if they hear this, they know I was very outspoken to them about wanting and deserving more money. Because when I started there, I had a specific job title, and then it ended up being a completely different job title a year later because of like everything that was changing and happening. And it took me, I ended up getting a raise, but it took a lot of making lists of what my job duties are and like keeping track of what I've been doing and like really just kind of advocating for myself. And I think a lot of women in the music industry feel like they can't do that because they're either afraid of the feedback or they're afraid that someone will say no or, you know, get fired. But first of all, no one can fire you for asking for more money. Second of all, it's always worth speaking up, because if you don't, no one's going to think about you to pay you more. Like, you always need to be in the position where you're like, I'm worth this, I'm going to ask for it. And it's hard to do without feeling uncomfortable, but I think it's a really important topic, especially as
for sure.
being a female in music, because it is a very male dominated industry. and yet you have to have thick skin out there.
Yeah, I mean, and there is this thing I think in the music industry where there's so many people that are trying to get in that they'll do it for free, so that creates this feeling like you could just be replaced by the thousands of other people that would be you know,
like happy to work for free.
But it's like, for how long would they do that for? You know, it's like, yeah, that's great for a year.
Yeah, and then you see that there's like a really high turnover rate, especially in these PA positions and the lower level jobs in music. Like, people quit and get hired so frequently because, like, you realize when you're working somewhere and you're barely making ends meet, like, oh, is it really worth it? Like, all of my struggling, like, do I really, why am I struggling so much to be working in this position, you know? And like, it really, I think hard about it. And I think the music industry is a beautiful place. I think music, let's not say music industry, but music is a beautiful thing. And I love it dearly. But I think there's a lot of elements of the industry that need to change.
Still. Yeah, for sure. And it's, yeah, that's kind of the thing, is it changes so much, like every couple of years, the type of jobs that people are doing can completely change. And then everybody's just kind of trying to get by. So it's this weird thing where it, you know, it isn't quite like working for other major companies where they kind of like can expect what they're going to be making, or, you know, where it's so up and down, and, you know,
especially for bands. Yeah. It's like, you guys, like, it's crazy because being a band now is like being a startup, you know, cause it's totally. Like, it's so much more than just music now. It's like, what is your brand? What is your, are you on TikTok? What are you doing to like stay relevant? Like all of these things that like the big man up top or whatever, like the hand of like the industry is like, I don't know. It's because there's this huge gap in wealth between like fans and the heads of record labels. You know, it's like, there's so much space there. And there's so many different bands nowadays that are doing it in all these like different ways. Like you guys, I love what you guys are doing because you tried the major label thing. It didn't work out because you knew it wasn't you and it wasn't your band. And you've cultivated this amazing community that has lasted for so long. And I think that's something that's super important that fans forget to do. They're like so caught up in the like brand element of it, like trying to stay relevant and cool, that they kind of like lose fans along the way because they don't include them and they don't try to bring their fans along into this evolution of their band. They just try to like catch on to the next trend. And I think with anything, it's like staying authentic is so important, but it is a struggle because especially in this COVID era, like you guys make most of your money or a lot of your money touring, and the touring business is non-existent for 2020. So
yeah,
it's definitely, yeah, it's hard.
You just have to adapt. And it's like every day we're trying to figure out what's the thing to do to get by. And, you know, it is certainly not an industry to get in if you kind of want to just coast and like, and kind of, you know, be aware of what you're going to be doing in 6 months from now so you can have your vacations mapped out. And things.
Yeah.
This is not. But so you have your dream job, and then, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're doing some other things. But then, you know, all of a sudden, I start seeing your Instagram of your cheese plate is like exploding. How in the world do you go from your dream job in the music industry that you've been working on since you were 13 to walking away from everything to do cheese plates. That's it seems very extreme.
Yeah, so it's funny because a lot of people see it that way, because on paper that is literally it. It's like, why did you work in music for this long to get this dope job to literally leave for cheese? So it's funny because it's like another important thing is that what you see on the internet is not real, and there are so many different factors that go into someone's happiness and life. And just because it's a dream job doesn't mean it's perfect, and that's okay. And when you realize that, that's okay too. I think my job was amazing. There were so many, I got to like go to the Grammys and the Emmys and do all this amazing stuff. I was working to the point of burnout. Like, I worked 14-hour days, 7 days a week, because I was John Batiste's assistant at The Late Show. I also toured with him off the road. I ran his social media. I creative directed music videos. I was like doing everything for him. Again, like my tendency to like work too much, but it was great because I was like, you know, having all these experiences, but I was feeling so exhausted. There'd be days where I'd work like 32 days in a row with no day off, constantly on a plane. And cheese plates were always this thing that kind of lived alongside my life, kind of on the sidelines. So when I was really young, my parents were avid entertainers, and I would always be on like crudité or cheese plate duty. My mom would just like throw a bunch of stuff at me and be like, make a nice little plate. I'm like, okay. And coming from like a visual background, loving photography, I always like to just arrange things, use my hands. And then in college, this turned into an Instagram that I started, because my friends and I would have wine and cheese parties to make ourselves feel a little fancy with like some really cheap cheese and meat. And I would like throw a rosemary sprig on there and be like, oh, it's fancy. And I started taking photos of my cheese plates and just put them on Instagram, because I wanted to document them, and always having a love for social media. It was the new medium at the time. And so this Instagram I just kind of kept up with over the years, because it was this passion project. Like, I had so much fun making cheese plates. I started making like tote bags for my cheese plates and selling them in a merch store, like almost taking the model of like the music industry and applying it to cheese. I like had a logo designed and started growing it really, really slowly. So I started in 2013, and by 2018, I had 50,000 followers. So it really was like over time, it was just this thing that was building. But in 2017, 2018, that kind of 2 year period, I was working this crazy, like, you know, these crazy hours traveling so much. And on the weekends when I did have off, making a cheese plate was like my creative zen, where I can just slow down and everything would just disappear. You know, like probably with you guys, like you're playing the bass, you're playing the drums, and you just get in this zone where you're just like, time doesn't exist, and you just like zone out. For me, that's making a cheese plate, because I realized like I'm cutting vegetables. I can't be looking at my phone. I'm like painting almost with like putting these pieces of meat together, making a salami river, and it looks like an art piece. And then using my photography skills, taking pictures of that and putting them on social media and like sharing that with the world. It was like, it was this really fun side project that I had, and I never expected it to be anything. Like, I knew that it was like a fun Instagram, like everyone has a food Instagram, you know, you're like, oh yeah, I have my little like take pictures of the restaurant, post on his Instagram. That's what it was for me. But as I kind of started building it more into a brand and realizing that people were following it, I was like, oh, well, maybe I can like try to leverage this in another way and like see what happens. So in 2017, my friend Leslie, who you guys might know, she has Doug the Pug, like Instagram famous dog. Yeah. So we've been friends for years, because I used to have a pug, and just through music, she used to work in the music industry, now does Instagram, very like similar parallels. And she's helped me a lot through this whole world. But I asked her in 2017, like, how did you publish a book? Because she had a book out with Doug. And I always thought that cheese plates would look beautiful in like a coffee table book. And she was like, oh, well, you need a book agent. I was like, okay, well, where do I start with that? She's like, oh, let me introduce you to mine. So similarly to music, it's like you meet someone who introduced you to someone who introduced you to someone. So I met with her book agent, who ended up signing me kind of as her little passion project, being like, this is a good idea. Like, yeah, let's see where this goes. And the concept for the book was called Cheese by Numbers. So essentially it's like paint by numbers maps, but instead of paint, it's items on a cheese plate. So like if you see one on the cheese by numbers map, that means cheese, and two means meat, three is produce, mm-hmm. and so on. So you kind of build this step by step, which makes it really easy. And at the time in 2017, I think I had like maybe 30,000 followers, and we pitched it out, and I got rejected by every single person who saw this deck. Literally every single one. They're just like, no, sorry. Like, yeah, the idea is interesting, but, you know, there's not enough press behind this. There's not enough followers. Like, no one's going to buy this book. Sorry. Which is funny, because actually exactly 2 years ago from today, I tweeted, which I'm just going to read it because it was exactly 2 years ago. And so interesting. May 11th, 2018. Ixnay on a cheese guide. Not much more to say than that. Cheese is love, but a book on it is unnecessary for most people, says a man from an undisclosed large bookstore chain, saving this tweet for when I prove him wrong.
That's amazing. Yeah.
I have to ask, did you purposely set the release date of the book?
No, I didn't. The weirdest thing is no, like my release date actually got pushed back because of COVID. So yeah. It's just divine timing.
It's supposed to happen.
So that was a dude from a very large bookstore chain. And I was like, wow, I'm never going to write a book. No one likes this idea. This is discouraging. But like, instead of getting down about it, I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to prove them wrong. Cause like, I hate when people doubt me. Just kind of like, don't doubt me. I can do it. Whatever. So I ended up making an Instagram for Cheese by Numbers just to kind of save the name. So then I had two cheese accounts, one for that cheese plate, which is the community, and then Cheese by Numbers, which is like the method. And so in 2018, I was still working with John Batiste, still traveling crap ton, still exhausted, still making cheese plates. And there was this moment where I got an email, and it was from the Rachel Ray Show, and they were like, hey, we found Cheese by Numbers. Would love to have you come on the show to talk about your method. And I was like, what? Cheese by Numbers? This account has like 5,000 followers. And so I went on the show, and they didn't want to talk about that cheese plate because they thought it was confusing to talk about two Instagrams. So we talked about Cheese by Numbers, and it aired in December, and overnight Cheese by Numbers blew up to like 20,000 followers. And then that cheese plate was like 50,000. So I was like, oh my God. Okay. I have these two cheese accounts now. I need to like make sure they both like link to each other. I felt so stupid. Cause I was like, why did I make Cheese by Numbers in the first place? Like, this is so stupid. But then I'm like, no, the reason why you got on the Rachel Ray Show was because Cheese by Numbers. So like, it all makes sense. I was at this fork in the road where I was just on TV, and I got like, you know, an influx of press, and I was like, man, I don't know what I want to do, because we're still working in music, but like there was really no, like I was John's personal assistant. And when you're a personal assistant, there's like not much room to grow. Like you can either go to like the management route maybe, or like be a personal assistant forever. I don't know. I was like kind of in this position where I wanted to move in the music industry to another job in music. And I was at this crossroads. Whereas when I got rejected the first time from these publishers, I was so in my job that like, I couldn't have left to write a book, like no way.
Yeah.
So in January, I was actually with you, Garrett, in the car. You guys were driving me to the airport, you and Lupe and Fallon. And I got an email from the Today Show, and they were like, hey, we saw you on like Rachel Ray. Do you want to come on the Today Show? I was like, what? This is crazy. This is like the biggest show on TV. Yeah. And it was just like one of those moments where I was like, okay, what? Like, this is bigger than I thought, I think. But I still was confused. I'm like, I just don't know what's happening. But like, let's just go with it. We'll go with it. So I go on the Today Show. And then after that, it's just like an explosion of press. And so I had this Vox article come out that circulated. I accidentally started like a viral story about making a cheese plate on an airplane, when in reality I was just like hungry with John Batiste on an overnight flight to LA, and just documented it. And it got picked up by like Travel and Leisure and like Food and Wine. And then I got an email from an imprint at Random House, and they were like, hey, we saw your Today Show episode. Would love to talk about a book if you've ever thought about writing a book. And I was like, well, that's funny.
Well, I thought about this years ago.
Yeah, I'm like, I have the proposal here. So I met with them, and luckily they were a brand new imprint, so we didn't pitch them previously. And at this point, my agent dropped me and was like, oh, well, if you try to resign to any of these agents I pitched to, like, I'm your agent still. Like, I was locked into this, like, crazy contract with her. But luckily, the Dial Press wasn't one of the ones that she pitched to. So I talked to them about the book. We kind of formulated the idea, which was very similar to the original concept, but kind of looping in this narrative of how cheese plates are like self-care and how they can be like a relaxing activity. And then I ended up quitting my job in April because I had very tight deadlines to write this book. So I signed the book deal May 6th of 2019. And usually books take like 2 years to make, just from like photo shoots and planning, recipe testing. I buckled down in my apartment and did all the photos and food styling myself and just got it done in 4 months, and now it's coming out tomorrow.
It's insane. What a crazy story.
Incredible.
It's nuts. I tell this is the first time I actually told this story from when I was like 13 to now. Usually it's like starting at cheese. Yeah. And it's actually pretty crazy. Like, I'm confused every day.
So are you at this point, is making a cheese plate, has it become a job, or is it a relaxing thing?
So that's funny, because it's like music was always the job and became like the burnout culture job. And now music is so like enjoyable to me. And it's like my side passion, like love. And cheese is the same. Like, cheese does not burn me out. It doesn't make me feel as like crazy as I felt in music. But there are days where, like, I have to do, like, when I was writing this book, I had to make 5 cheese plates in a day and then take them all apart and put them in the fridge. And it's, like, that part about making a cheese plate for content creation bothers me, because I'm, like, the whole point of making a cheese plate is to, like, share with other people, and then you, like, have this moment and you're all eating it together and around the table drinking wine. It's, like, it's a moment. It brings people together. But when you're making a cheese plate for, like, a post and then you take it apart and put it away, you're like, oh,
it's a little sad.
But I still do kind of tap into that creative state when I am making a plate. It's like, it's almost like watercolors or like, you know, sculpting pottery. Like, you're just kind of, it's a work of art in a sense. So I still do feel in the zone and like, and relax when I make a plate, but just the enjoying that part. I when I lived in Brooklyn, which hopefully I can go back soon, my friends and I would have like bi-monthly cheese parties, which I'm pretty sure you guys have been to before.
We have. We actually went like the day before You're Okay came out. I think we went to your house too.
Yeah. That's
and we
true.
Had a big cheese party.
And it was like Fallon's birthday. There was like a lot going on.
Yeah. That was fun.
Yeah. We had a cheese party. And with those, basically I take all of the cheese that I've used for these posts and make like 5 cheese plates and then give them to everyone to eat. So that's where it all comes together, when I can serve it to my friends.
So how do you come up with the ideas for these? You know, because obviously, like, you've evolved from just the simple cheese plates with brie and crackers and things that people would expect to, you know, to where you're making ones with chicken wings on them or whatever.
Well, you have your salamis, right? Salami River.
The Salami River.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which you came up with.
Choice. Yep. Trademark.
Yep.
That's amazing. I mean, like, how did those ideas come?
I mean, it's like every day is like a new inspiration. Like, it's crazy, because have you ever heard of the book Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert? It's a great book.
I haven't either.
It's all about like feeling inspiration in the moment and like acting upon it, or you can just kind of like let it pass, and then that idea will like tap into someone else. It's like we're all just these like vessels for ideas, and like when something comes to mind and you like feel this like spark, just like act upon it. Yep. It sounds, yeah, it's like a little heady.
I've heard a version of that from some ideas too with like musicians.
Yeah. And it's kind of like that. We're like, I'll wake up in the morning and be like, you know what? I think it could be cool to make like astrology themed cheese plates because cheese and people, they all have personalities. And like, I bet I can find a way to like figure out a cheese pairing that matches with a Leo, you know?
Yeah.
So that, and like also taking ideas of like other interests I have and like merging those into cheese plates or holidays. That's a big one. Like, oh, it's Halloween. Let's do like a fun cheese plate that has like a cutout of a ghost on it and like cut the brie into a little ghost shape. And it gives you that little focal point that stands out and makes it like an actual themed plate. Also seasons are really important to cheese plates because, you know, a big part of a cheese plate is the produce and produce is all seasonal. So like in the summertime, you can do like grilled vegetables, which pair well with like a mozzarella or a fresher cheese. And then the fall, you can do like some dried apricots and dried figs that go well with like a more aged cheese. So just kind of like considering pairings, and like, because I've been doing this for almost 7 years now, I've learned so much about cheese and pairings and all types of cheese. So keeping the integrity of like the pairings on the plate, but using these little like visual elements to make a specific theme pop. It's kind of like the go-to.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, I guess as a final thing for somebody out there, what are they going to get from the book? If they're into entertaining people, but don't really like me, like don't really feel like they could do a good job of making a cheese plate look good. What exactly are they going to get out of the book?
Yeah, so this book is exactly for that purpose, because I've seen so many books out there with cheese plates included in the book. Like, the book isn't completely cheese plate related, but there's cheese plates in there, and people just kind of list the ingredients next to it, and that's it. And you're like, well, how do I even build that? Like, where do I even start? And so the beauty of this book is that there's 49 or 50 cheese plates in here, and every cheese plate has a 4-page spread. So the first page is your grocery list that's separated by the cheese by numbers method, which is cheese, meat, produce, crunch, dip, garnish. And then that page also has the type of plate. So if it's like a wooden cutting board, 11 by 17, like gives you the inches, gives you the plate type, your yep. grocery list, everything's on the first page. The second page is the photo of the cheese plate. So just like a really nice image of it completed. And then you flip the page and there's a 6 step-by-step going through every method or every step of cheese by numbers. So the first photo is just the cheese on the plate. The second photo is the cheese and the meat. The third is the cheese, meat, the produce. And then it keeps adding on so you can see how I built it. And then the last page has this cheese by numbers, paint by number illustrated map, which is actually illustrated by this girl, Sarah Galanti, who I met at the Late Show. She was the receptionist at the time when I was a PA. So she illustrated my book, which is awesome. And the numbers on the plate correlate to the steps in the process. So it's really like a foolproof guide. Like, you don't need to be a chef. You don't need to be a food stylist. You just follow the step-by-step instructions visually and you can make a beautiful cheese plate. So it's really easy.
Hell yeah.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations on the book, and congratulations on turning, you know, I think that's what anybody would hope to do. And, you know, for us in the band, that's what I feel like so lucky that, you know, we were able to turn a passion into a job.
And, yeah. It's crazy.
And into something that we get to do every day. You know, the fact that you've now done that a handful of times and you know, with the cheese to be able to do it completely on your own is awesome.
Oh, thanks, guys. And I appreciate you featuring me on your podcast. This is awesome. I love that we can all, like, have full circle come together moment and be like,
we've been
crazy.
We tried to do it, in the fall or something was the original idea. But I think this is timed out to be even better. So, hell yeah.
I know. This is perfect.
Yep.
And now Pat has a baby.
Yeah.
I know.
Remember when we were all kids?
Crazy
kids
time.
Kids at the teen center. Amazing.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thanks so much. And everybody.
anybody out there, go and get the book. It's on, I assume, every site.
Yeah, everywhere books are
Amazon
sold.
Amazon is probably the easiest way.
Amazon's easy. If you want to support your local bookstores, indiebound.com is good. You can look up any local bookstore and request an order for it there. So that's awesome, too. But, yeah, that Do Cheap that. Plate Will Change Your Life is the name.
Heck yeah.
Hell yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for chatting with us.
Yeah, thanks guys. Marissa. Let's hope we can go on a dance floor at a wedding sometime soon. After
yeah.
Awesome.
Right.
Hope so. Awesome. Well, have a good rest of your day, and I'm sure it'll be an awesome week with a bunch of exciting stuff. So.
Yes, indeed. All right, awesome. Guys. Thank you again.
Cool. Take care.
See ya.
Bye. Bye.